Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 214, Rogue Larians. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Borgullet to my Rathtar, we have Carl Eclair.
Oh, it's great to be Star Trek creatures in the Star Wars galaxy.
All full of, wiggly tentacles.
Jason, none of your lies will be free. You won't be able to lie to me today. I'm a Borgullet.
That's true. But I'm a crazy rolling ball of teeth and tentacles, so I'm not sure you want to get close to me.
Very true. I'm excited. This is, episode four in a row, I think, where we're talking Rogue One.
Aside from our carry episode.
Except for our carry episode, of course.
But, oh my gosh. I can't get enough of this movie.
I can't either. I'm so in love with it. And from the sounds of a lot of our Larians, so are they.
Right.
So, and that's what this episode is all about. You know, we have invited you guys to write in, to call in, whatever you want to do. Get your input in on your thoughts on Rogue One. So this episode's all about you guys, and of course we'll just respond to what you had to say. Of course, thank you to all of you who did take the time to write things in, and even for some of you to record something to send in. Of course, appreciate that. But before we get into your responses to Rogue One in general, we do have a matchup to go over from last episode, which, Jason, I think you and I both agree that this is probably the most, or at least tied for the most, Larian responses ever for a matchup.
Yeah, we got 34 responses from you guys, which, my goodness. So because we've got a lot to get through with your responses to Rogue One, I'm going to run through these really quick. I'm not going to read them in full, many of them in full. So I'll get your name, who you voted for, but we really appreciate all you sent in for us. On Facebook, Travis Magruder gives it to Finn. Neil Lowry, Cassie.
Wait, real quick. Yeah, we forgot to say who it was between.
Oh, yeah.
Just in case, in case you forgot, the matchup was between Cassian and Finn.
Yes, Cassian and Finn.
Sorry to interrupt there.
Completely. Yes, thank you for catching that, though. Facebook, Travis Magruder says Finn. Neil Lowry gives it to Cassian. Jeffrey Fishbach, Cassian. Austin Chinal, Cassian Andor. Christoph Keitzman gives it to Finn. Our buddy Jazz, Andor, hands down. Greg Cass, Battle of the Pegwarmers much? Pistols at Dawn both draw, but only Cassian pulls the trigger. Sorry, Finn. Piotr Smigelski, I think. Gives it to Cassian. Paul Gann, Cassian. Dave Laidlaw also gives it to... Actually, he gives it to Finn. Jeffrey Beaumont, Cassian. Kyle Avery gives it to Cassian in a blaster fight and Finn in melee weapons, so I counted that as a tie. Ian Statsny gives it to Cassian. Bobby Gordon, Cassian. He tells Finn it's all going to be okay, then shoots him in the back. Ian Raletta gives it to Cassian. Rebecca Fink thinks that Cassian would catch Finn off guard. Finn is no slouch, but it's hard to defend against someone you don't suspect or see coming. That said, I don't think Cassian would want to do it, but if it's for the cause, he's willing to shoulder the guilt. Joey Letson says Finn would try to use the Force, but it doesn't work that way. Cassian easily wins. Dave Broadway gives it to Cassian. Joe Isaac, Cassian. Bordori MacArthur, Cassian. Rue Eckhart, Cassian. Timothy Dillon really likes Finn, but gives it to Cassian. Philip Liebold, Cassian. Thomas Davis, Cassian. Kyle Taylor, Cassian. Abdul Malik also gives it to Cassian. Randy Giles, Cassian. Cody Murphy gives it to Cassian. Mateus Cavero, Cassian. Thomas Babcock, also Cassian. On Twitter, We're almost done here, folks. At R2SW gives it to Cassian. At Jedi Jack gives it to Finn because of his staff training and he used the lightsaber for a little bit. At King Og9 Gewitz also gives it to Cassian, but he likes Finn more. And finally, an email from Patrick gives it a tie. Oh my goodness. So, our final Larian tally is 28 for Cassian Andor, 4 for Finn, and 2 ties. What say you, Mr. LeClaire, while I catch my breath?
I'll say a few things so that you can breathe for a minute. But you know, I certainly agree with the majority of our Larians, and I give it to Cassian as well. You know, I think Finn is a little, underappreciated, especially as his action figure is concerned.
I have mine.
Second only to Constable Zuvio. Yeah, I think Finn is, he's certainly an adept soldier. Being a First Order Stormtrooper, it's pretty clear that these guys have been being trained since they were children. So he's certainly a capable soldier. The difference between him and Cassian, though, when it comes to, like, if it was just the two of them against each other, like, Cassian's going to definitely have the edge because he's been running covert ops since who knows how young he was. And, right. You know, he's been hardened by war in a way that Finn hasn't. You know, Finn, you know, the First Order, for the most part, was kind of in the shadows for a long time until we really get to Force Awakens. So Cassian has more, like, hands-on experience, plus the type of soldier he is gives him a very clear edge over somebody like Finn. And, of course, you know, almost all of you pointed something out about how Cassian will shoot him in the back. You know, Cassian will do what has to be done. And I think that's exactly true. You know, Finn at least seems to have a little bit more of a stronger sense of morality maybe than Cassian does initially. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when it comes to just a straight up fight, Cassian certainly has the edge with a clear sense of ruthlessness that Finn doesn't seem to possess. But what do you say?
I'm also going to give the slight edge to Cassian here. But I'm going to point to a different thing than what everyone else is saying. I'm going to use a discussion had between Chirrut and Baze regarding Cassian in the fact that Chirrut asks if Cassian looks like a killer. And Baze says, no, he has the face of a friend. Now, so does Finn. They both have the face of a friend, but we both know who is more willing and ready to kill out of the two of them. I think Finn would be a lot more trusting of Cassian. Doesn't trust anyone out of principle. So I think because of that, because of the fact that he has the face of a friend and that Cassian doesn't trust anybody out of principle, I think he's going to have the slight edge over Finn. I do agree with you. I think Finn is being a bit underappreciated here, but it's a close match. But I think Cassian's moral gray area is going to allow him to do things that Finn wouldn't even dream of doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you have it. The final tally.
Final tally comes out to 30 for Cassian Andor, 4 for Finn, and 2 ties.
So again, thank you all of you, all 35 of you who responded to this particular matchup. I really appreciate it. And before we actually jump into the show, and I apologize that it's completely forgot to do this on our last episode as well, but we still have a few Patreon supporters that we need to mention and thank for their contribution to the show. So this episode, which is brought to you in a sense by the Larians, is also being specifically brought to you by our patron Jeremy Burtz. So Jeremy, thank you so much for supporting the show, for helping out, encouraging us in what we do, and yeah, thank you for being the unofficial sponsor of this episode of the Wampa's Lair.
Yes, you have saved another Wampa.
Indeed,
thanks to your donation.
Indeed, you have. I wanted to also say a quick little number before we jump into the episode is if you're on our Facebook page, you probably saw this week, but we posted, I was lucky enough to be on My Star Wars Story, which is Scott Rifen's show, which to me is still probably my favorite Star Wars podcast out there, because I love hearing people talk about, you know, Star Wars and you know, how it's kind of grown as they've grown. And I begged Scott a long time ago to be on it, and if you didn't know this, he's got a long queue, but he makes that very clear in every episode. And he recorded me a year ago in August. And this is, I am not in any way slamming Scott for this. He puts so much work into it, and he has so much other stuff to do. But Scott obviously was, he posted it on New Year's Day. And I actually did sit down and listen to it, even though it was my own story. But and I just loved hearing it, because I recorded it so long ago that it was fun to hear that. And I say that just to say, if you aren't listening to My Star Wars Story, you should really check it out. It is such a good Star Wars podcast, and Scott does such a phenomenal job with his editing. And that's the thing. Like, I don't remember my story sounding as cool when I recorded with it, but after, like, Scott's magic touch, like, I was like, wow, that actually came out really well. So whether you've listened to that forever, or you've never listened at all, or you're an occasional listener, I really, really encourage you to check out My Star Wars Story. It's such a great show, and Scott Rifen is such an incredible host. You can tell he has a professional career as a radio
broadcaster.
Thank you, because he is absolutely incredible on that show, and I'm very honored to have been on it. So, again, just I really want to plug that show, because if you're not listening to it, you should definitely check it out. You will find yourself falling in love with it. I can guarantee it.
Yeah. It's a good show. And, Carl, it's a good episode. I listened to it.
So. I appreciate that, Jason. I hope you did. Jeez.
I need to sit down and record with Scott.
Yeah. Scott, I mean, if you...
We need to sit down and figure this out.
Yeah. Well, you just got to email him. It's that simple. It's just there's probably a long list of a queue. So might be probably a while till he gets to you.
Probably.
But anyway... let's hop into what our Larians think about Rogue One, and you know, let's kick this one off with an audio clip. We got a few audio clips, so I want to start this with an audio clip by this young man has been a faithful listener for a while now. So this is a clip that our buddy Jackson recorded and sent in to us. So I'm going to start with Jackson's little clip about his thoughts on Rogue One.
Hey, Carl and Jason. This is Jackson. I just want to say I thought Rogue One was an awesome movie, and it was a great way to end 2016, especially in light of the recent polarizing election. I feel like people really need a universe to escape into, especially one like Star Wars. I thought Rogue One was awesome. Once again, I was most attached to Jyn Erso, and I loved the battle scenes and the cameos we got, especially from Red Leader and Gold Leader. And don't even get me started on that Darth Vader scene. I said I was attached most to Jyn Erso, who's my favorite character. I loved that scene of Rin Jedha when she's killing all the stormtroopers with the baton, and it doesn't hurt that she's really beautiful. I feel like Disney has done a really good job with the female protagonists lately. It all started with Ahsoka, and then Rey, and now Jyn. When Disney first got the rights to the Star Wars franchise, a lot of fans were very nervous. And I feel like Disney has done an awesome job with The Force Awakens, Rogue One, and all the books and the comics have come out, and the cool video games like Battlefront, and also the hit TV series Star Wars Rebels. And I feel like Disney should be applauded for their hard work that they've done, and just to keep putting for all those people working in the creative medium of Star Wars, just keep it up. Anyways, guys, I've been rambling on a bit too long now, so I just want to say God bless and Merry Christmas. And may the Force be with you.
Well, thank you, Jackson.
Thank you very much.
You know, Jackson hits a good point about the strength of the female protagonists we've been getting consistently now from the Star Wars franchise. And, you know, that is – it's rooted really in Ahsoka. I mean, well, you could say it's rooted in Princess Leia, although Carrie Fisher was always very quick to say how one-dimensional the character of Leia was. And she kind of was. You know, she – I would say of the big three, she is the least developed in the original trilogy. I still think she's a great character, though, and
oh, yeah.
So do all Star Wars fans. But Jackson's really hitting a great point about, you know, Ahsoka and then now, you know, Rey and now Jyn. These are all really powerful female protagonists in Star Wars. And, you know, I don't think Disney is doing this specifically to try to, you know, do anything to be politically correct. They're not trying to – I don't think there's an agenda in it. I think we just live in a more open, diverse world now. I mean, not even just the females. Look at Rogue One's cast. I mean, it's extremely diverse. And I think they're just simply making a movie that is more available to a wider community. So I really appreciate Jackson like pointing that out. And you know, Rey is this great character who we still have a lot to learn about. And then Jyn is just, you know, I think what I like so much about Rey and Jyn specifically is they're very strong characters who are also have really extreme moments of vulnerability. And I really like getting to see that because I think that makes them richer characters.
Yeah, no, I agree. And this is something that's been going on obviously since before Disney, because Ahsoka was around in the Clone Wars before Disney purchased Lucasfilm. But yeah, no, you're right. Is they've really worked hard on creating strong female characters, or just characters that are strong that happen to be female. You know, it's not, you know, they're not going out to, you know, redefine what a hero should be. They're, you know, the struggles that these characters still go through are the same struggles that all heroes go through. It just so happens this time around that they're women. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's great. And the fact that we have characters like this only broadens the appeal and only broadens the fervor out there in the fan community for the stories, for the characters, because more people can see themselves in who these characters are. And I think that's an important thing. You know, it, and the way that it's done in Star Wars is done perfectly, for the most part. Well, maybe perfectly is not quite the right word, but, you know, as flawlessly as is humanly possible, I feel. So it's a great point, and I'm glad Jackson brought it up.
Yeah. So thank you, Jackson. Let's hop over to, I think we got most of our responses, I think, came from Facebook. Is that correct? Well, we got a few emails too, but
we got some emails, some Facebook. There's a couple Twitter ones in here too.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so let's hop over to this guy. I'm highlighting it for you. I'm going to let you read this one.
All right. Jeff Langrud wrote in. He said, "I thought Rogue One was great. Seen it twice so far. I do wonder how much better it would have been with a John Williams score. I'm sad at the thought of whatever sort of magical music would have been for the entire end sequences, especially Vader's rage. We'll never know, but I imagine it would have taken it to the next level."
Hmm. Interesting point. You know, what would this movie have been with a John Williams soundtrack? Obviously, we all know for practical reasons, John Williams isn't going to be able to score the standalone movies and the saga movies and be, you know, 82 years old or whatever he is. But I actually think Michael Giacchino did phenomenal. And, you know, we opened the show, the top of the show, with this song called Hope off of the soundtrack, which is when Vader is kind of going ballistic. And I mean, he's not going ballistic, actually. He's fully in control.
Right.
He's just dominating is what he's doing. And, yeah. you know, I think it was in our last episode, Joe Hogan pointed out actually the strong similarities to that, that the chorals, the chorus kind of like getting really rambunctious during that piece and comparing it to some of the music from Revenge of the Sith when Anakin's killing all the Separatist leaders.
Yeah.
And who was it that sent us that email, Jason? Was his name Patrick?
Or Ryan.
Ryan.
Ryan sent us an email with a couple of YouTube videos that had the music from the end of Rogue One when Vader shows up, dubbed over Anakin slaughtering the Separatist Council on Mustafar. And it works pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty good.
I'd say so, too. So, yeah, thanks to Ryan for sending us that email. But yeah, no, Jeff, you're definitely onto something there. Is just how much different would this have been? But I think for what makes me so happy is that Michael Giacchino, oh my gosh, I always say his last name wrong.
Giacchino?
Giacchino, that's right. But what Michael Giacchino does so perfectly, like John Williams, is develop themes and use them consistently throughout the film. I mean, just think back to Force Awakens, how often we heard Rey's theme, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you can say the same for Rogue One, how often we heard Jyn's theme, you know, in thrown into the mix. And at different times, you hear it at like different like levels, you hear it in different tones, you hear it darker, softer, brighter, you know? I mean, that's mm-hmm. that is John Williams in Star Wars, so.
Right. Right. It's always something that moving forward we're going to ponder, mm-hmm. especially, you know, heaven forbid if we get to a point where John Williams passes and there's still, you know, more Star Wars films left to be made. We're always going to be wondering what it would have been like if he had done it. Right. And I think that Rogue One gives us a glimpse as to what we might expect. It's different. It's unique. I like it. And it's John Williams-esque. It fits in Star Wars. It's not quite John Williams because no one can clone John Williams. I'm not going to say I'm sad that I missed what John Williams did because I'm loving what Michael Giacchino gave us. But it is always something that moving forward, there's going to be that question, you know, and unfortunately we can't answer it, because John Williams didn't do that. And, you know, we'll never know because he'll never have even attempted to do something like this. So it's just one of those things where, moving forward, there's always going to be this question of what would have been like if John Williams had done it. And while it's always an interesting question to ask, I just want to make sure that we don't try and make what Michael Giacchino and whatever other composers they bring in, if they bring in other composers, make them have to live up to John Williams when they're trying to leave their own mark as well.
So. Yeah. Well, I think that's where Michael Giacchino is successful, is he's able to do what Star Wars music does, again, which mm-hmm. is create, you know, some clear emotion to the film and create new themes and develop those themes throughout the film. That's very Star Wars-esque, and I think he does that exceptionally well. And it's also important to remember that some of these standalone movies, they're not going to be the same type of film as the saga films. And the saga films are, they're very much, mythological films, right? They're these kind of grand stories. Whereas something like Rogue One, it's a very personal story of struggle. And I was doing a podcast with Steve Glosson yesterday, and Steve and I were talking about this. And Steve made a great point of, he said, can you think of any time in any Star Wars film where a character is like really crying? Like, there are characters who like shed it. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Anakin Singletear, but there's except for Padme in that one scene, there's nobody that really, really cries. We see people like most specifically Jyn. Jyn really cries. She really, you know, feels the emotion of, you know, connecting with her father. And I think Giacchino does a great job of developing that feeling with his music. So it feels Star Wars to me, and it feels like it's different, which mm-hmm. is good, which is very good.
Right.
But since we're going with this music stuff, which is great. Yeah. I love talking about the music of Rogue One. Mateo Garcia wrote in something very specific about the music as well. So Mateo says, "Hey guys, I just listened to your episode, Save the Rebellion. First off, great episode as usual. You guys,
that was the one with Joe and Greg on.
Yeah, that's probably why it was. That's probably why I liked it so much, because of Joe and Greg. But that's all right. We'll take it too. He says, "You guys are my favorite podcast. Thank you so much, Mateo. That's very kind of you."
Shucks.
Says, "Now about the music in Rogue One. I agree that the music was one of the weak points on my first viewing. I do appreciate it now, however. Actually, I didn't fully appreciate it until listening to hours of analysis by your show and other podcasts, namely Star Wars Oxygen. Here's my question. Should it be considered a good or great score if most people won't appreciate it with only one viewing and digging deep into the connections to prior Star Wars music? I mean, of course, we go back and analyze it. We can find all kinds of things the composer did that make a lot of sense and are, in fact, brilliant choices. But if the score doesn't land in the first viewing, which is all the average moviegoer will experience, can it be considered a success? Yes, you can have all the callbacks, nods, and tie-ins to the prior saga music you want, but if it doesn't work without doing that deep dive into the analysis of it, I don't think it's a success. I do like the music now, but just keep hearing people say kind of the same thing. It didn't land in the first viewing, but after studying it, they get it." So this is an absolutely great point, Mateo. Really appreciate you bringing that up. And Jason, it sounds like you already are ready to dive in.
I am. This is such a unique thing, because Rogue One and The Force Awakens are the only Star Wars soundtracks that we've really had this sort of situation with, where the soundtrack comes out the day of the movie release. You know, we don't get it early. We've had the original trilogy soundtracks for decades. We've pored over those. We've listened to those. And with the prequels, the soundtracks came out at least a week before the movie did. And so we would go in, we'd listen to those soundtracks, we'd pore over those, and then we go take that into our first viewing of the movie. And so we already knew the soundtrack. We already knew some of the themes and some of the iconic music from those movies. With Force Awakens and Rogue One, I've had the same experience for the most part, where the music felt a bit underwhelming for me after the first viewing. But then as I went back and I listened to the soundtrack, and then I went back to see the movie, I started picking things out and I started really identifying things I liked and that things of that nature. And whereas I will agree, I think The Force Awakens has themes that are a bit more easily recognizable. It is something that in this new age of Star Wars, I think we have to realize that these soundtracks don't already exist in our minds going into the movies. Because like I said, how many people actually remember what they thought of the soundtracks to the original trilogy when they went and saw it for the first time? Mm-hmm. I know I can't, and I only started listening to it because a friend just gave me the Phantom Menace soundtrack for my birthday, and then I went, "Oh yeah, Star Wars music, that's great," and I picked all the rest of them up. I think we as Star Wars fans might be a little unfair to the new music coming out just because we've had so much time with everything else, and that this era is the only era of Star Wars that we haven't had the soundtrack out beforehand. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And I don't know if the average moviegoer that Mateo talks about really cares too much about the music in a movie. We're not average moviegoers as Star Wars fans. We go in expecting a great score to go with the movie. So,
sure.
I don't have an actual answer, but I'm just like, it's a situation that is kind of unprecedented for us as Star Wars fans. So,
yeah, you know, I think obviously I like we pointed out early on one of the earlier reaction shows. I'm with you, Mateo, that you know, that first viewing, I remember when I walked out of the theater, I was like, music was like, it was okay. And I did say to my friend Greg, I said, you could tell I recorded it in 4 weeks. And I said it in a little bit of a disparaging way, like, yeah, like it wasn't that great. But at the same time, like, what do you expect for a guy who only had 4 weeks? But after already the second viewing and just, you know, then having like some time to sit at home with the soundtrack, it was like I did a complete 180. And already, I mean, it's one of my favorite Star Wars soundtracks already. You know, I put it above Force Awakens by quite a bit, actually. I do. I mean, I will always love Rey's theme and Jedi Steps. Those are two of my favorite Star Wars songs, period. But as a like an album to listen through, I've listened through Rogue One probably at least 25 times now. I might have listened in a year now. I might have listened through Force Awakens 20 times because there's a lot of songs on there I'm not crazy about. And it's not knocking John Williams. I love him. And during the movie, I love the music. But Rogue One, there's just such a new richness to it that I really appreciate. And it's, you know, and I think for myself, looking back on why I wasn't as impressed the first viewing is I went in with some blinders on. Even though I thought I didn't have any expectations, as a hardcore Star Wars fan, I had expectations, right? And it's not even that I was disappointed, but I know what I think I expect from Star Wars, and it was just something so different that I didn't like that it was different. But I'm over all that now, and I understand just how rich and amazing it is. And your question specifically of can we consider it a success if this is kind of the case, I would say yes, we still can. And the reason we still can is think of any great album you love, and not even a Star Wars music. Think of like, you know, a great band like the Beatles. You know, sometimes when a band puts out a new album, and I know for me, like my favorite band, Mute Math, I don't know if probably nobody knows who they are, but every time they put out a new album, the first listen through, I'm like, that was not as good as the last one. That's what I always bring with me. But after a couple listens through, you realize like, oh, well, this is what I love about this album. It is different. Well, it's supposed to be. It's not the same album. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be said to be true of a Star Wars or of a movie soundtrack as well. Just because the first viewing you're not enamored doesn't mean that without, you know, after sitting down and letting it digest, that you can fall in love with it. I think that's actually what makes it better. You know, and this is in no way to like belittle pop music. I love pop music, specifically boy bands. But pop music is meant to be something that's kind of flash in the pan, right? It gets your attention, you enjoy it. But after like a couple of weeks, you're like, you know what? I'm okay if I never hear that song again, you know? But if you think of like great music, like, you know, a Led Zeppelin song or a Matchbox 20 song, hey, I love Matchbox 20. and a lot of people would consider them just pop. But, you know, if you listen to these, you know, some of these artists who really put their heart and soul into a piece, right, it stands the test of time. And I think that's kind of what Star Wars music does, is it's not poppy in that way. It's not necessarily meant to just be something, a one and done deal. And that's the beauty of Star Wars music. And I think that's what Michael Giacchino did absolutely perfectly in this film, is he gave us some recognizable themes, but the richness of the score requires some digestion. And yeah. I think if you can continue to digest it and your love for it grows, that means it's a success just as much as if you love it once, but then you start to dislike it, right? That's to me the opposite of success. Success should mean it can continue to grow in your appreciation for it. So that's why I think Rogue One is a success.
And that's why the Star Wars soundtracks in general are a success, is because they've endured.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're still around. And I mean, who remembers, you know, the great movie scores that you remember from 70s and 80s? You got, you know, Star Wars, Rocky.
E.T.
E.T., Jurassic Park.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones, Jaws, you know, mainly it's John Williams, but there's one or two others.
Backstreet Boys, Millennium. Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. I thought we were just naming great albums.
No, sorry. but, I mean, who remembers the, you know, soundtrack to Dirty Harry?
Or You've Got Mail.
Right.
Who remembers that movie?
you know, Star Wars stands the test of time. And with these soundtracks, what are you
laughing? Sorry, I cracked myself up about You've Got Mail.
Gotcha.
Sorry.
And the you know, while there are some certainly some tracks on these albums that grab you immediately, you know, things like Duel with Fates or the Imperial March or things like that grab you immediately, it's through additional listens that you really start to dive in and really grasp the entirety of it and really enjoy a lot of different things. You know, one of my favorite tracks from the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack is the track General Grievous Lands on Utapau. I love the opening part of that track.
That's so good, that beginning part.
But nobody talks about it, you know? So it's not one of the big pieces that, you know, jump out to you. It's not Battle of the Heroes, you know? But I love this opening.
Sorry, you can keep going, but it's worth pulling up.
I wanted to listen to it. but, you know, I wouldn't have realized that unless I was doing additional listening. You know, I wouldn't have really discovered how much I loved that piece except for additional listening. And I think it's too early to really call Rogue One's soundtrack a success or not, because it's only been out for less than a month, you know. I think it's a success because it works as a Star Wars soundtrack for me. But I think we'll see, as time goes on, parts of this soundtrack come out, stand the test of time, and if they become timeless and ingrained in Star Wars, that means they're a success.
Sure. Yeah, completely agree.
I think we need to do another audio thing, because we've only done three people's responses so far.
I know, I feel terrible. So let's grab... Wait, you know what, actually... I do feel a little bad. It's supposed to be about you guys. But I think you guys are just bringing up such awesome stuff that, like, we can't help but talk about it. So thank you.
Right.
Here, I'm going to play another clip. This comes from another Patreon supporter of ours and a good fan of the show. This is from Bobby Gordon. Sorry for the delay. It is coming.
Hi, Carl and Jason. It's Bobby here from the UK. I really enjoyed listening to your Patreon episodes that you did out in the lead up to the film. And I was listening to the reaction show that you put out shortly after the film came out. And towards the end of that episode, you were having a discussion about Galen and Jin's love for each other. And it got me thinking about a few things that I thought that I'd share with you, because it kind of blew my mind. So Galen's love for his daughter motivates him to sabotage the Death Star, and then Jin's love for her father motivates her to get involved with the rebels to vindicate her father's name and to get the Death Star plans. And then the Death Star plans enable Luke to blow up the Death Star, and that makes him come to the attention of his father. And then, you know, he discovers his father, and he has love for him, which awakens Luke's father and enables him to be redeemed and to destroy the Emperor. So really the conclusion is that Galen's love for his daughter is so powerful that it starts a chain of events that leads to the redemption of Anakin Skywalker and to the destruction of the Sith and the world's most and all the evil in the galaxy. So that is just like so amazing. I was not expecting that to come from this film. I thought it was just going to be a war film, but really it adds to the mythology so much. So I mean, that's just my thoughts. Looking forward to hearing the rest of the discussions. Keep up the great work, guys, and may the Force be with you.
Oh, thanks so much for that, Bobby. Bobby actually emailed that thought to us about a week after the movie came out. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad, Bobby, thank you so much for actually recording this, too, because I think it sounds better to hear it from you than us to just read back your email, which was a great email. But yeah, Bobby, you're really onto something here. Also, didn't know you were British, so that was really cool too. It's always awesome to know that you're reaching people across the pond.
Yes, but
I absolutely love what you're bringing with this thought process. And to me, it's kind of like a math proof, which, by the way, I always sucked at in high school. But right, like you remember, like proofs. I don't even know what kind of math that is, but you know, you had to like say, well, like if this, then that, and if this, then that. And that's essentially what Bobby's doing. He's just kind of pushing the story forward by starting with love and ending with love and kind of the effects love has on the Star Wars universe. And I love this because one of my favorite things about Star Wars is, you know, kind of the final message in Return of the Jedi is that love saves, which is a very powerful message. And, you know, Bobby, you've really hit the nail on the head by indicating that Galen's love for his daughter inspires him to make this flaw, and then everything else flows from that. And I remember emailing Bobby back and saying something along the lines of, he put in something that would start a chain reaction. Well, he started a literal chain reaction of love.
Yes.
And that's exactly right. So what a great insight. And like you said, a great insight into actually the expanded mythology that Rogue One also gave us. Because I'm with Bobby kind of, and this is why I wasn't as excited about Rogue One for a long time, is like, oh, it's going to be a war movie, which will be cool. But, you know, what I love about Star Wars is some of the stuff that goes a little bit more into the depth of mythology and all of that stuff. And Rogue One really did that very well. And I don't know what else to say, because Bobby, you put it so eloquently and so perfectly that there's not much more to say.
Well, he's identifying one of the central themes in Star Wars is it's the familial love that we've got, you know, between parents and children. And then, you know, even that even goes back to the prequels, you know, with Shmi and Anakin. And then we also see what happens when love is misdirected in the way Anakin responds to Padme and their unborn children. You know, so it's definitely an incredible thing that they did by putting that part of Star Wars into Rogue One. You know, the fact that, yes, we get the family dynamic between the parent and the child, and how the love of one for the other does something, inspires something dramatic, you know, and the chain of events that goes all throughout this series is based off of, while it takes place in a galaxy full of war and political intrigue and stuff, the motivations by and large throughout this galaxy are very personal ones. And it's those personal choices and the motivations that are very personal to the people making those choices that affect the galaxy as a whole. And the fact that Rogue One with Galen and Jyn taps into that and really, you know, lights the fuse, knocks the first domino over, whatever other metaphor you want to throw in there, to get Luke onto the scene in a way that allows him to survive the Battle of Yavin, and then further go on to discover who his father is and redeem him, is really remarkable. So, great point, Bobby. I love it.
Yeah, me too. Let's return to another one of our written responses.
All right. You want me to read this one?
Yeah, why don't I go ahead?
Okay, this one comes from Jeffrey Fishbach. He says, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I've been a fan since I was 7 years old. I am what some would call an OT generation kid, but I also love the prequels and Jar Jar Binks as well. Still can't figure out why some people hate him so much. But this isn't about the prequels or Jar Jar. It's about Rogue One, a Star Wars story. As an OT kid, I loved this movie, and all the small callbacks to A New Hope were awesome, and they were done right. They were not ham-handed and did not feel like fan service to me. I fell in love with all the characters so quickly that it just made me care about them more. And to me, that's the sign of a great director and a great storyteller. So I say, great job, Gareth Edwards. Great job. And of course, my favorite character in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, has to be Jyn Erso. She was a true rebel, and I'm a light side rebel kind of guy, so yes, I love Jyn Erso. And like Rey from The Force Awakens, Jyn was a badass from the start. She could handle herself without anyone's help. It's so easy to like her. I don't want to give any spoilers away, so I don't think there's any more I can say without spoiling it. So, if you haven't seen Rogue One, A Star Wars Story yet, what are you waiting for? Exactly. Yes. What are you waiting for, and why are you listening to this podcast?
Right, yeah. Great points, Jeffrey, that you're bringing to the table here. And I completely agree with his take on instantly liking the characters. I felt that way even the first viewing, where I wasn't as taken as I am with it now. Even, I mean, the second viewing and the first viewing was like day and night. And it's not that I disliked it the first viewing, but like the hardcore love I had for it by the second viewing was just incredible. And I think he's absolutely right that these characters, and we get that early in the film, we kind of are introduced to all of the main characters after the prologue. You know, the opening sequence with you know, Galen and little girl Jyn, you know, and Orson Krennic. We first meet Jyn, who's in jail, and then we run and see Cassian, who is doing some shady stuff, and then we meet Bodhi, who's just defected and is, you know, trying to find Saw. And well, I guess, well, those are the ones that are were introduced to right away. But and then when we first meet, you know, Chirrut, you have to love him. You know, I love him. How did you know I have a necklace? For that answer, you'll have to pay. And then he has that cute little smile. Oh my God, I love it.
For that answer, you'll have to pay. And then you just see Baze hovering in the background,
right,
polishing his gun, and you're just like, oh God,
yeah, don't mess with them. But yeah, I mean, all of these characters, you're right, Jeffrey, is like, they're so, like, just, they're introduced in such a great way that you do instantly care about them, and you don't, and they're introduced in such a way that you get a sense of where they're coming from. Jyn, we understand that, you know, she's Galen's daughter, because we get that in the prologue, and then we understand that she's in prison, and we understand that Cassian is a rebel, but wait a minute, he's not 100% good. Like, there's some grayness to him. Right. And Bodhi is somebody who's trying to do something heroic, but we can tell that there's a bit of cowardice to him.
Right. And things aren't going the way they're supposed to.
Exactly. So, oh yeah, I love Jeff's point about, you know, how quickly we can like these characters.
Right.
And insofar as Jyn, it's, I think for a lot of folks, I don't want to, you know, obviously can't typecast everybody, but I'm sure a lot of people preferred Jyn in the movie. And I think that's mainly because she is the kind of central figure in the film. She is probably the main character. But what you point out, and this is true of Rey as well, is these are two people who are very independent. They get by just fine on their own. But the different, that I think what's so important to point out, though, is in order for them to grow, they do need help. And I think that's so important. We live in a culture today where to be successful means that you can do it all on your own. That's not the real world. And that's certainly not the world Star Wars shows us. That is not what George Lucas ever wanted to show us. George was very big on, you know, the effects we can have as a community, as a family. So Jyn can only go so far. She's literally in prison. So there's not much more she can do with her life unless she's helped out. And she is. She's helped out and freed. And, you know, she's helped out then by the Rogue One crew. And the same with Rey. There's only so much Rey can do, but she needs people like Finn and Han and Maz Kanata and now Luke. You know, we all need somebody to continue to grow. And I think that's why I like Jyn so much, is she's very strong and independent, but she can't do it all on her own. And that's such a huge theme of Star Wars, is that none of us can do it on our own.
Right.
Right. So.
I don't have much else to add to this, but yeah, you're right. The way that they introduce us to the characters in a way that is instantly, you know, makes you like them is really great. At least that was the way it was for me. So, yeah. You want to take the next one here?
Yeah, I'll grab this next one. This one comes from Thomas Davis. He says, Rogue One is awesome. After seeing the Vader hallway scene, you realize just how important the Jedi are to the galaxy. Without the Jedi to keep dark side force users in check, especially DSFU, especially dark side force users, thank you, as powerful as the Sith, the galaxy is defenseless. There can't be any balance without the Jedi, which is exactly what we hear from Lor San Tekka.
Yep.
And,
yep.
And so, awesome point, Thomas. You're absolutely right that seeing somebody like Vader, this force of destructive nature, just mm-hmm. kind of ravish these rebel troopers, it is very clear that without the Jedi, there can be no balance in the Force.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm not going to have much else to add to this because the point is very self-explanatory and very perceptive, Thomas. So, I think you're right. The Jedi are important to the galaxy in a big way. And when there are no Jedi, you know, people like the Sith can just run amok, and it's not a good thing. And it's detrimental to the galaxy, and it's detrimental to the Force.
Yeah,
that's why the Force works in mysterious ways with people with the last name Skywalker.
For sure. And I'm actually really appreciate your point, Thomas, because, your insight into kind of the importance of the Jedi and the importance of keeping the dark side in check. I feel like there's a really great scene with that in Rogue One. And the scene I'm thinking of, this is one of my favorite scenes in the film, and it's a very little one, is after Jyn and Cassian decide to leave and go off to Scarif, there's that small little interlude scene with Mon Mothma and Bail Organa. And, Mon Mothma says, despite what they might think, war is inevitable, right? And then she says, what about your friend, the Jedi? And Bail says, yes, I will contact him. He served me well in the Clone Wars, but he's been in hiding ever since the Emperor's Purge. I felt like that scene does a fantastic job of wedding the prequels and the originals. And
yeah.
I think what it shows too is the prequels kind of were, I was saying this to Joe yesterday when we were hanging out on Skype, that to me the ultimate success of the prequels and why I love them so much is because they show just how good things were in the galaxy for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And in Rogue One, we realize now because of Order 66, right? When he says the Emperor's Purge, you immediately just think of Order 66 going down in Revenge of the Sith. You realize how dark the galaxy has become.
Right.
And I love that scene because it really shows that things in the prequels were so good, but in these last 19 years, things have gotten really, really bad. And now it's time for an upswing, right? Because Rogue One is kind of it's a little bit darker. It's a very desperate movie, but it's where the pendulum starts to swing back, right? In the prequels, things start really good, but the pendulum swings all the way to this horrid hell on Mustafar.
Right.
Rogue One is this critical juncture where the Alliance at large is recognizing just how much the Empire needs to fall, and it triggers into motion the OT, which is this slow incline back to the good old days.
Right.
So,
right.
That's a great point, Thomas. Thanks for sharing.
It is. It is. You want to take this next one?
Yeah, take this next one, and then we'll hop over to our last audio clip after this.
Okay. This one comes from Daniel East, who says, Rogue One, first half is a slog to watch. Uninteresting characters for the most part, and there's no build-up to the last act. And as epic as that last act is, it doesn't make the overall film amazing or awesome. Also, people complained about the Force Awakens soundtrack, but the score for Rogue One was so weak.
Hmm. Well, it's always good to have somebody who's not crazy about something. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's the world we live in. But I feel like
he wrote this after his first viewing.
Yeah, perhaps. So, Daniel, it's not our job in any way to make you a fan of Rogue One. If you still think this, that is your prerogative. Because certainly, walking out my first viewing, I felt like there was a lot of a slog to the film. A lot of the characters weren't super interesting, and especially the music, I thought was weak. 7 views later, I wouldn't agree with any of that. I think it's a fantastic movie. I think the only part that does still a little bit feel like a slog to me is Edu. Some of the Edu stuff certainly kind of slows the pace of the film down for me. Mm. I feel like the first act is great. That middle act kind of gets slow. And then the third act, of course, is super epic.
Right.
But a lot of Star Wars have those kind of slog moments. Empire is full of them. Return of the Jedi has it when they kind of get to Endor, things slow down considerably.
Oh yeah.
Attack of the Clones, you know, it slows down.
Middle section, right. the middle section of all of these Star Wars movies for the most part, with maybe the exception of A New Hope, because I feel like after the first 10 minutes, A New Hope slows down and then it slowly builds up about halfway through. Right. But all of them have that slowdown in the middle, and it can be a slog to get through sometimes, especially when you're really wanting to get through to that final awesome act. I would agree that Rogue One slows down in the middle, definitely, but it's punctuated with things like Jyn getting to see her father again, and then Jyn making the case to the Rebel Council right before they decide to start gearing up to go to Scarif. You know, I wouldn't call the characters uninteresting. And, you know, if you've listened to our show, you know how much we love the ensemble cast. But, you know, this is your opinion, this is your prerogative, and we're not going to sit here and tell you that you're wrong. But we'll just agree to disagree on this. And Daniel, if you have seen it again and have changed your mind on some of these things, we'd like to hear that. Or if you've seen it again and it's reinforced your opinion on this as well, I'd also like to hear that. Just, I don't know, someone... It's always interesting to hear the other perspective. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's super easy for me to go into a Star Wars movie and come out just on cloud nine. That's just the way I'm built. So I don't understand points of view like this. And so if you would care to expound and explain on that, I would find that interesting, even if just for my own edification. So,
right. Yeah, no, I think anytime the first time you watch a Star Wars film, or really any film for that matter, you're going to have kind of like these quick emotional responses, and they can be positive or negative, and it doesn't matter which. And I think for me, when I first walked out of Rogue One, I didn't have such a positive feeling. So then I tried to figure out, okay, why is it negative? Well, you know, I didn't really like the music, and you know, it felt like this was missing or that was missing, right? Like then you start to try to investigate why do you feel this way? And I think Daniel, you're able to articulate what you didn't like about it. It didn't work for you because it's kind of a slow go, which I think there are definitely those parts in this film where there's a bit of a slog to it. You found the characters uninteresting. And there was no buildup in the last act. I mean, I think the characters were very interesting. And I feel like they do a great job of building up in the last act. Like everything is slowly building. So, again, like Jason said, just curious if you still feel that way after maybe a second viewing or two. So definitely feel free to like write back to us and let us know if you still do. And if you still hold the same opinion, that's cool too. So, but yeah, it's always good to point out that, you know, there are things sometimes that don't work, and I really do agree with Daniel that there is a bit of a slog effect to part of this movie. And when I went with Greg the last time, he goes, "Wake me up during Edu." That kind of slows down a bit, which is funny because it is sloggy and rainy. So maybe that's intended.
It's all mucky and icky, and it slows you down.
Right. So I'm going to play our last audio clip, which was sent to us by our friend Jazz over in Norway. And let's hear what Jazz has to say about Rogue One.
Hey Carl, hey Jason, hey all you Larians out there. Just thought I'd chime in and say what I thought about the latest Star Wars movie, Rogue One. And what can I say apart from the fact that it is freaking awesome. It is so good. It's beyond good. I've seen it 10 times now, and it gets better and better for each viewing. It really does. This is the movie that The Force Awakens actually should have been. Force Awakens was good, yes, but it wasn't as amazingly, mind-blowingly awesome as this one here. Everything from the stunning visuals, like I can't wait to see a print of Jedha City blowing up with the Death Star hanging above it, to CGI stuff like Tarkin and Leia. Could not believe it, just blew my socks off. Characters who were fleshed out as well as they could be in a two-hour movie, given time to breathe, and yet they resonated so well with me that I actually had tears in my eyes when they finally, spoiler alert, didn't make it. Everything about this movie was great. The cameos were great. Darth Vader, Wow, holy crap, Kenny. That scene was just so mind-blowingly cool. If this is the way Star Wars is going to move forward, I cannot wait for the future. So, rock on, Star Wars. Woo! Woo!
I love Jazz. Such an enthusiastic guy.
And I'm so mad and jealous that he's seen it 10 times already.
Has he? I'm not surprised.
That's what he said.
Oh, okay. Oh. Yeah. Well, that's all right. I remember when I went down to New York last year for Force Awakens, and he flew over to go with a big group of us. He'd already seen it, I think, 3 times. So it was crazy.
I think he saw it like 5 times within the first 36 hours.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think Jazz is doing a great job there too, because it, you know, obviously for all of you who have written in, you know, it's a little difficult to get everything you're feeling. Jason and I obviously have this advantage of a thing called a podcast, so right. We can unpack every little thing that we like or maybe didn't like. So we appreciate you guys in any way, even just tackling some of your initial responses. And Jazz even said in his email, like, this is just kind of some of my initial thoughts, right? Like, we know Jazz. Jazz has a lot more to say.
Oh, yeah.
But again, he's just giving us that kind of emotional response of, like, this really worked for him. And it really worked for me, too. Apparently when Jazz left the theater, he didn't have shoes or socks on because of the Vader scene, which is fine. LOL. I wholeheartedly agree with Jazz's point about the multiple viewings. You know, the more I see this movie, the more I love this movie. And again, kind of going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier with the music, you know, the more I listen to the soundtrack, the more I love it. That bodes well for the future of the film. And you know, Jazz highlighted something that we've talked about a little bit, Jason, and I've noticed other folks talking about, because again, this is the first time ever in history we've had 2 Star Wars films in a year span.
Yeah.
So inevitably, I think we all inevitably compare it to Force Awakens. And I don't think any of us are doing that to belittle or shortchange how much we loved and enjoyed The Force Awakens. But I do agree with Jazz that this movie is something that Force Awakens wasn't. Force Awakens very clearly played it safe, and that's okay. And I still like it. But I think over multiple viewings, my love of Force Awakens kind of quelled. I'm not going to say it decreased or like I don't like it anymore, but it certainly kind of calmed down. Whereas it seems the more I see Rogue One, the more I'm loving it. So life is balance, I guess. So it's kind of balancing each other out. I think Jazz has got some great points there.
Yeah. And we'll see what we're saying about Rogue One in a couple of months too.
Exactly. You know, super important.
We're still less than a month of this movie being out. So, you know, we could be saying the same thing next year when we're, you know, freaking out about how incredible Episode 8 was. We want to just put that out there. But Force Awakens and Rogue One, very different scenarios for me in the fact that I can't make up my mind fully on Force Awakens until I see where it goes. And I've said that numerous times. Rogue One in and of itself is something I can make, in a sense, a much easier snap judgment on because it's supposed to be a standalone movie and the movie that comes after it is already out. So I know how that affects the movies. I'm going to come out and say it. I like Rogue One more than I like Force Awakens. But this movie hit a lot of different elements for me that I like in Star Wars more or better than Force Awakens did. I need to go back and rewatch Force Awakens. I've caught some of the soundtrack on my playlist and stuff, and I'm like, I really need to go back and watch this again. But that being said, Rogue One, it's in my top 3 Star Wars movies.
Sure.
So yeah. Force Awakens isn't. Mm-hmm. So, the inevitable comparisons will come, but I think for me anyways, I just want to say all these movies are head and shoulders above everything else. for me. So wherever I'm ranking these movies, Star Wars always reigns supreme when it comes to everything else. So Yeah. But the excitement that Jazz has is infectious. And I wish it was easier to get him on the show more regularly.
Yeah. So, Jazz, thanks so much for taking the time to send that audio clip in. So we'll go to another written response we got, and this is coming from a guy named Carl as well. I think it's Carl. Yeah, Carl with a K. Yay, just like me. Carl Angela Baxter says, Rogue One brought A New Hope's crawl to life. I found the whole movie epic. It showed me how the galaxy is outside the Skywalker story. Love to see how the Force is viewed without the Jedi. Brilliant storytelling. Wow. Such a little amount of comments, but so much wisdom and depth to those. So thank you, Carl, for these awesome thoughts. Always have agreed with that. Like, whenever I've watched A New Hope twice now since seeing Rogue One, and that opening crawl just it's so meaty now. Like, you feel the weight of all of those words.
Nice. I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch A New Hope. After seeing Rogue One, what I want to be able to do is find a day where I can go see Rogue One earlier in the day and then come home and watch A New Hope. And I haven't had the time to do that yet. So, but I can imagine. And this is the thing, it was the running joke for my Comic-Con panels when we end up talking about Rogue One is, spoiler alert, here's the synopsis for Rogue One, and we'd read the first two paragraphs of the A New Hope crawl, you know. But you're right. It brings new life to that crawl. It doesn't just bring it to life, but it brings new life, and it packs it with so much emotion and meaning and desperation now. And I love it. And, you know me. I always love the Force and the Jedi in particular, but getting Chirrut and Baze and a new way to viewing the Force is just something amazing, and I love it, and you're right. It's brilliant storytelling.
It really is, and I think another element that I really appreciate Carl bringing up is, and it's something that I really, really think did a great job with, is how the Force is portrayed without the Jedi. Mm-hmm. You know, because even in the OT, the Force is only ever discussed by Jedi and the future Jedi, a.k.a. Luke. So how does the galaxy at large view the Force? Well, they certainly still seem to believe it. You know, as far as the religion, it seems to be extinct by A New Hope. But we still have some believers who cling to it, specifically on Jedi, and they wipe that out.
Right.
But I think for the mythology of the Force, and this is something that I've come to see specifically in light of Rebels, is that the Force is still very much at work in the galaxy. Just because the Jedi are gone, the Force is not. And I think we see that specifically in the characters of Chirrut and Baze. Baze finds his faith at the end of the film, and Chirrut never lost it. He still has this faith that the Force is working. And we know, because we have the advantage of having seen the original trilogy, that it indeed is working, but it's a struggle, and it's a real struggle. And even, you know, I mentioned this, I think, in the last episode, when they finally successfully send the plans and Cassian and Jyn are limping to the elevator. Cassian says, "Do you think anybody's listening?" She says, "Yes, I think someone's out there. Someone heard," you know, like, and I think that she's literally implying the rebel fleet, but I think even in a bigger way, it's like, yes, there is someone, something listening. I think the Force is very active in the Star Wars galaxy outside of the Skywalker family. The Skywalker family and the Skywalker story, again, they're huge players in the will of the Force. But there are other players as well. And I think I really like that Star Wars has been expanded to that. And I will be the first to correct myself and say, I didn't used to be, right? I was the one, you know, bitching and moaning about Ezra and what was going on with his story. But I am 100% sold on it now, and I think it enriches the Star Wars universe by telling us this story. So thank you so much, Carl, for bringing that point up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a couple of Twitter responses here. @DavePisani75 says, made A New Hope even better. Second best Star Wars film. Love how it fills in the story gaps of Episode 4. Must see movie. Hashtag Wampus Lair. Hashtag Rogue One.
Yeah. And then you want to read the next one as well because it's kind of similar.
Sure. At KingOg9Cubit says, took my son and four of his friends to hashtag Rogue One. Walked out loving it and Episode 4 even more. Didn't think that was possible.
So both Dave and KingOg9Cubits are making, you know, it's similar to what Carl was saying as well, like how much it's increased our love of A New Hope. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is, Jason? Why do you think we can walk out of Rogue One, go home and watch A New Hope and be like, wow, I think I enjoy A New Hope more now? Why do you think that's the case?
That is a question I haven't the why. That's the question I haven't asked yet. Oh man, I haven't had a chance to think about this. Have you?
Yeah, a little bit. So, well, actually, first off, I want to say, again, I made this point earlier, but Jason, you and I have the advantage of having a podcast. We get to unpack every little thing we want. But, right. You know, Dave and King Cubits here, you know, really curious because obviously you guys are writing this on Twitter. So you're also very limited to 140 characters. But, you know, curious why for you guys that it you know, has enriched your experience of A New Hope now. Dave Pisani pointed out that it fills some of the story gaps of Episode 4. I'm curious what those story gaps are he's implying. I just can't think of what those would be. But for me, I think the reason it enhances A New Hope is it really makes you feel just how desperate things are in the galaxy, how desperate the Alliance is and how they're fighting mm-hmm. with everything they've got. And what they succeed in doing initially is only destroying one space station. Like, yes, it's extremely important, but they still have a lot to do. And I think Rogue One really highlights just how much they're struggling to make that happen. And I think that specifically what it enhances for Episode 4 for me, it doesn't, the Skywalker stuff isn't, for me at least, enhanced at all because he's not touched on, right, in Rogue One. Mm-hmm. But what is specifically enhanced is, you know, some of the conversations between Tarkin and Vader, you know, and when they get to the Misasi Temple at the end of the film, you know, it seems a little bit more sparse. We can wonder how many of the, you know, the folks got killed at the Battle of Scarif. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel it so much more in those moments, and especially the opening space battle and crawl. Like, you understand just what they're trying to pull off now. You understand the stakes, I think, a lot better.
Here's what I think it is. You really understand the importance of the New Hope that is Luke Skywalker. That's what's enhanced. You really realize why Luke being that New Hope for the Rebel Alliance is so crucial. I think that's, you know, and yes, it gives, you know, the desperation of the rebellion a much, you know, more real feel to it. But I think the big thing for me right now that I'm thinking about it is it really puts in perspective not only for the rebellion but for the galaxy as a whole, for us, why Luke coming on the scene and being that New Hope is so crucial and is so key in beginning to turn the tide for the Rebel Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
There we go.
Yeah. So we have, you know, a few more responses. We got through the majority of them, which is great because we normally struggle with that. Mm-hmm. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 responses still left. If you didn't hear your response to Rogue One read today, it's because we are going to cut it short here because there's a few other things we want to talk about before we end the episode. But please know that we are going to get back to these, not in our next episode, but in 2 weeks. Because here you go, good news for a lot of you because you've been asking this for a long time. But Steve Glosson is going to be on the show next week, and I'm so glad to have him on. I love Steve; he's the funniest guy I know. But Steve's going to come on and
no, I'm kidding. No,
sorry, Steve. It's true.
It is true.
And he's got the best laugh.
I don't take any offense at that. No, Steve is the funniest guy I know too. So,
Steve's going to come on, and actually, what we're going to talk about is Star Wars rooms and why do we have them? What do we have in them? And why are they so darn important? Steve is a huge Star Wars collector, more so than Jason or I.
Probably combined.
Yeah, because you and I don't really consider ourselves collectors. So, I mean, I have a collection, but I'm not a collector.
Right.
Maybe we can talk about the difference of that, too. But, yeah, Steve's going to come on. Steve has a really, really dedicated Star Wars room. He's a huge collector. So we want to talk about that. And also what we're going to encourage you guys to do, either before next episode or even after the next episode in light of it, if you have a Star Wars room or, like, just a Star Wars corner in a room or a Star Wars shelf in a room, we're going to encourage you guys to take a picture of it and send it in so we can share them. If you send it to us, we're going to tell you right now we're going to share it. So if you don't want this being shared, just don't send us anything. Feel free to just write it. You can write us a description. I do finally have a Star Wars room, which I absolutely love. It's where I podcast from. I know, Jason, you've essentially turned your room into a Star Wars room for the most part.
Yeah, Star Wars and Doctor Who have taken over my room completely.
Yeah, we'll ignore that Doctor Who garbage, but...
And you know what?
Sorry. I've never seen it. I just don't care about that show at all.
It's not for everybody. No. I agree it's not for everybody. But if you are a Doctor Who fan, check out my Doctor Who podcast called Talking Time Lords.
Yes, and if you're not a Doctor Who fan, don't bother. that's kind of mean. So next week we're going to have Steve Lawson on. We're going to talk about Star Wars rooms. So if any of you have a Star Wars room, or like I said, just a Star Wars center in your living space that... you know, you've got some of your Star Wars stuff displayed. We'd love to see pictures or even just descriptions. And Steve's going to be on to talk with us, like, why they're so darn important to us and why we have them.
We'll probably talk about Rogue One again, too. So
yes, that's bound to come up a little bit. Because we're having Steve on, we're gonna hit pause on the Larian responses just for one more week. But we'll get back to the rest of them the following week. So please know we are going to read your stuff.
Yes.
So. But before we get to all of that to that stuff next week and move any further forward, Jason and I wanted to share where right now our ranking of the Star Wars films is. Because I think this is going to happen every time a Star Wars movie comes out. We're going to shuffle things. Now, for me, typically, specifically my top two, probably even my top three, they're never going to change. Very, very unlikely. Very, very unlikely that something will ever be better than Empire Strikes Back, in my opinion. That being said, Jason and I want to share with you how we rank the films right now. And, of course, encourage you guys to send in your own rankings, which a lot of you have done, which is great. But also, something we like to do next month is look at and this is something Jason kind of brought up on today's episode and something my friend Greg and I have talked about is how there are things about Star Wars we really like. There are definitely all sorts of elements in a Star Wars movie. So we're going to challenge ourselves and we're also going to challenge you. And this is going to happen in, you know, probably sometime early next month. We're going to challenge you to come up with what are the 10 things in Star Wars that you absolutely love. And then we're going to look at each film and how many of those things, in our opinion, are in each of the Star Wars films. And does our rankings... do they match up, right? Does where our rankings stand now, will they match up when we kind of do the gritty work of putting in the elements?
The analytical breakdown?
Yeah, exactly. anyway, that's just, again, this is just looking at things to come. So without further ado, Jason, care to rank the Star Wars films?
All right. Do you want me to go top to bottom or?
What do you think? Bottom. What makes the most sense?
I think it makes more sense to go top to bottom.
I think so, too.
All right. So everyone knows forever and always at this point, anyways, Return of the Jedi is my favorite. I love Return of the Jedi. It's a sentimental favorite, and that won't ever change, probably. fighting between second and third right now is Attack of the Clones and Rogue One. Everyone knows I love that final act of Attack of the Clones. It's so amazing, and I eat up the Jedi action like it's candy. And so since I have a sweet tooth, that's why I love Attack of the Clones so much. but Rogue One is so good, and I'm really, really, really enjoying it and diving into it so much right now that they're really close and they keep like butting up against each other. So right now, though, I'm going to say Attack of the Clones is just barely in second with Rogue One right behind it. With all of our discussion, though, on this next movie, The Phantom Menace comes in at fourth place. The fact that we love it so much and have talked about it so much together on the show. Then I've got Revenge of the Sith in fifth, Force Awakens in sixth, with Empire Strikes Back and A New Hope rounding out the list. I don't think that should come as any surprise to you folks, knowing my proclivities in Star Wars. But in case you haven't heard me talk about this before, I do love all the Star Wars movies. They're head and shoulders above everything else, but I know it's somewhat blasphemous. Empire and A New Hope are at the bottom two of my Star Wars movies.
I bet you'd be at the bottom of a lot of younger fans, too, to be honest. If you grew up with the prequels will probably be in your top, at least some of them will be in your top tier. You know, it's just that sentimentality is important. So again, whatever we share, you can disagree with us, but you can't tell us we're wrong. Because again, this is such a subjective thing.
It is. What about you?
So for me, forever and always, Empire is my favorite. It's followed closely by Return of the Jedi is second. And then number three is Phantom Menace. I absolutely love the Phantom Menace. Followed very closely by Rogue One in fourth, Revenge of the Sith in fifth, Force Awakens at sixth, A New Hope is seventh, and Attack of the Clones is my least favorite. And Attack of the Clones, while the rest of those movies I always hold in a different, they're in their own category. The Dark Knight trilogy, which I'm currently rewatching, they're all way ahead of Attack of the Clones for favorite movies. Sorry, but Attack of the Clones is to me the weakest Star Wars film. And as epic as that last act is, there's just talk about a slog of a movie. So, and I don't dislike Attack of the Clones. I like it just fine. It's just my least favorite. By far.
Right. And you're not alone in that. Some days I feel like I'm the only person who likes Attack of the Clones as much as I do. So, but that's okay. That's why you're podcasting with me.
Exactly. And honestly, like so many of these, they're apt to change. I think the only things that will never change is my top two. Like I think Empire and Jedi will always be my top two. Attack of the Clones will always be my least favorite. At least I hope so. If there's something comes out worse than Attack of the Clones, I'll be a little disappointed. But Phantom Menace through A New Hope and all the in-between, I feel like those could fluctuate. But again, specifically Force Awakens, you know, that I had that right below Empire for when it first came out, but it's settled down to the bottom half of my list. And that could happen to Rogue One. Right now, Rogue One sits just above the middle. But again, I think a year later, it could fall further. I think I'll always prefer it to Force Awakens, but, you know, a lot of folks made a great point that, you know, Force Awakens will have more of an impact after episodes 8 and 9.
Right. And that's a movie that will be judged by its successors, you know?
Yep. Exactly. So again, we share those now for the purpose of something we're going to come back to, early next month. But again, encourage you if you want to share your ranking of the Star Wars films. And again, it's totally subjective. So if you know, you disagree with us, that is certainly fine. Like, we're all different people.
And please, folks, if you don't like one movie or above another or whatever, feel free to, you have the freedom to express your true order of these films and not the dink-dink order that the internet tells us we should have, that Empire is far and above the best, with, the original trilogy far and away above everything else. If you want to say, something like Revenge of the Sith is your favorite, you're perfectly fine to do that.
Absolutely.
On our page.
Yeah.
And we like seeing all the differences. But yeah, so please feel open and free to give us your true ranking, because I like to see what people say.
Same here. So again, lots for you. There's a lot of options here for you to get involved by the next episode or so. And we're going to give you more. But wait, there's more. Excuse me.
We've got another poll. We're going to go back to our polls. And while we were doing, your favorite scene in, each Star Wars movie, And we were originally going to do it in, you know, reverse order from Force Awakens all the way to The Phantom Menace. We decided, since we're still talking about Rogue One, we're going to jump that just a little bit. And we want to know what your favorite scene in Rogue One is. So,
yes. So, again, for those of you who just didn't even have the time maybe to write into this episode or anything like that, at least, you know, you're like, oh, but I got to say something about this. Here's your opportunity. Just tell us your favorite scene in Rogue One.
Yes.
And we'll you know, read those off at the start of next episode, which will feature Steve Glosson.
Yes. And Carl, if people want to weigh in on our poll on the order of episodes or anything else, where can they do that?
Well, they can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslayerpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslayer. Shoot us an email at wampaslayerpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, we encourage and appreciate any and all support you can give to us on our Patreon page, found at patreon.com/wampaslayerpodcast.
Yes, and thank you so much for all of your contributions for this episode. It makes our lives easier because we don't have to do any note preps. anything else, Carl, before we wrap this up?
That's it from me.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 214, Rogue Larians. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we'll see you next time with Steve Glosson here in the Wampa's Lair.